Welcome to Power Play. On a day the clock officially started ticking down to NAFTA's renegotiation that begins in 90 days or so, our expert on Canada-U.S. relations sets the stage for the tweak that became a do-over. Also coming up on today's show, it's for discussion purposes only, for the time being anyway, the first draft of what the federal government's carbon pricing plan will look like was rolled out. The federal environment minister will explain how that will work, whether Saskatchewan likes it or not. And the two warring small-c conservative factions in Alberta politics are set to reunite as one opposition, aiming to take down the NDP premier in 2020. We will talk to the leaders of both merging parties. And her resignation was the big story of the week. Today, we'll have a feature exit interview with opposition leader Ron Ambrose as she prepares to leave federal politics. But first, the countdown's begun to start a NAFTA rewrite with profound implications for Canadian business, which has moved goods freely across the border for more than 20 years. The Trump administration started the clock to give Canada and Mexico 90 days to prepare for his negotiating team. The Foreign Affairs Minister reacted this afternoon.
NAFTA has been in force for a significant amount of time, and it's time to modernize it, to bring it into line with the realities of the 21st century. That will be the approach that we take, and as I just said in French, I'm not going to lay all my cards on the table now. I don't think Canadians would like us to do that. We're going to take a very thoughtful and very strategic approach to the negotiations.
Okay, we'll see if my next guest will lay the cards on the table. We're joined by Scotty Greenwood of the Canada U.S. Business Council from Washington. I don't know, Scotty. I sometimes wonder if this White House could negotiate the time of day. How seriously and how dangerous are these negotiations? We're the David and they're the Goliath, and there's an unpredictable guy in the big chair.
It's really hard to predict on your right. I mean, what's starting now is the administration's conversations with Congress, which is sort of ironic because we all know that Congress really doesn't want to take a tough vote on this issue, but they definitely want to be consulted. Let the consultation begin. The good news that I saw today coming out of Congress was several members saying to the administration, look, you can negotiate, tweak is in the eye of the beholder, but while you're doing all that, don't disrupt this incredibly good, productive relationship we have with our neighbors north and south. So that's at least, you know, something to hope for. But I don't know, it'll be topsy-turvy for sure.
We've been blitzing the United States governance, whether it's governors or Congress or whatever. So we've got 90 days now before things get official. What should they be doing to prepare the U.S. to what they call modernizing this agreement? What comes next?
Well, I think the charm offensive, the Canadian charm offensive, the maple charm offensive should continue in earnest, because that's doing a good job, and there's a lot more to be done. In terms of preparing, what we do know is that Global Affairs Canada has embarked or will embark. I hope I'm not announcing this. I don't think I'm making news, Don. But Global Affairs is going to have a series of consultations in Canada with several sectors saying, what is it that you want? So organizations like mine, the Canadian American Business Council, as you know, we have our top 10 wish list. And we're seeing signals that several of the things that we've been asking for, others have been asking for, are going to be looked at. The question, like, for example, modernizing the agreement to deal with the digital economy and dealing with currency manipulations, things like that. The question will be, how contentious are those things? And are there other issues that aren't currently in the NAFTA that get thrown in, you know, with the kitchen sink, like dairy, like lumber? And will those things slow it down? Hopefully not, but we don't know that yet. And Congress will have something to say about that. But to answer your direct question, more of the same. More of that awesome maple charm.
I guess I'm curious whether this becomes a real serious give and take across the table. Like, do we say, is it feasible for us to say, for example, supply management, under the bus it goes, but then let's put softwood lumber in and make this problem go away so we don't have it coming back every 5 years. Is that what's going to happen here?
That's certainly feasible. I mean, you can do anything you want, right? It's a negotiation. And there are a lot of things that Canada would like to see from the United States, like liberalizing procurement rules. And so, you know, I think there will be a lot of give and take. I'm not going to predict. I couldn't possibly know once the negotiators get to the table what's traded and who's sold out and who's promoted. I mean, that'll all start. But that remember, Don, that doesn't start until August at the soonest. What you have happening now is the Trump administration, now that Lighthizer has been confirmed and sworn in, which just happened, they like made haste and are now talking to Congress. Once they do that, they know what's important to Congress, then they begin to negotiate or engage directly, I should say, with both you in Canada and also in Mexico. That's the other thing I should say. What we learned today is the administration has reaffirmed its desire to keep this agreement trilateral. That's a good thing. And we'll see how long that sticks. But that's I'd see that as a positive sign about the seriousness of the negotiation.
Do we have a walk away from the table option here, or do we have to sit and take it no matter how unrealistic the other side gets?
Canada is stronger than Canadians like to claim, right? You've got all sorts of things that we need and want. You're our biggest customer. You're our most important ally across the world in many fora. And you've got a lot of really important natural resources, as well as manufactured goods and services. So I think Canada has a stronger hand than people like to say it does. And the difficult question, and why it's good that your foreign minister is a great trade negotiator too, the difficult question is, when do you decide that you need to do that? Like, at what point do you have to kind of threaten to walk away from the table and say it's all over and then have the other partners beg you to come back? I really hope it doesn't get to that, but trade negotiations are tough, man. They are like serious bare knuckles, you know, events. And so I think there will be a lot of moments between now and the end of this where people, you know, pitch a fit and threaten to quit, and then hopefully at the end come back together and we get something that's better and more modern at the other end. But, who knows?
Okay, bottom line, I suspect this deal's too big to fail is what you're saying.
I think it is. I mean, our economies are so integrated. Just Canada and the United States alone, you know, Don, is $700 billion a year. Add in Mexico, and you've got just a magnificent sort of economic activity. And nobody wants to drive their own economy into the ground. The United States, notwithstanding all the sort of heated rhetoric and all of that, no Democrat, no Republican, nobody wants to bring our economy to a grinding halt, which is what, if you just threw NAFTA out completely and didn't replace it with something better or more modern, that's what would happen. I don't think people want to do that.
Okay, let's hope. All right, Scotty, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it, as always.
Thanks, Don. Good to be with you, as always.
All right. Earlier today, the federal government rolled out a preliminary plan to impose carbon pricing across the country over the objections of at least one province, specifically Saskatchewan.
This federal government white paper is frankly more like a ransom note. It's the federal government saying, here's what you're going to do from a public policy perspective, or this is what will be forced on the economy and the taxpayers in Saskatchewan, and we're going to fight it in court. We will await some more details, obviously, in terms of that court challenge.
Okay, to explain what comes next, probably a different version than what Brad Wall just did, we're joined by Environment Minister Catherine McKenna, and she's here in the studio.
Great to be here.
Yeah, well, what do you say to Brad Wall? He says it's a ransom note. He doesn't want to play ball. I'll see you in court.
I have probably met with my provincial counterpart, Scott Moe, 12, maybe more times. I just had my chief of staff and my parliamentary secretary there meeting with the premier's office. We've been sitting down with businesses in Saskatchewan. And the reality, is we know polluting isn't free. We see the impacts across the country. We see droughts. We see floods. We see forest fires. And so we need to take action. It's part of any credible climate plan. And every other province is working with us. Mm-hmm. Already, 4 out of 5 Canadians live in a province where there's a price on pollution. We've said to the other provinces, all but Saskatchewan, have said we're going to introduce a price. Mm-hmm. And so we're just encouraging Saskatchewan to figure out what is a system that works best for them. We've offered to help them. And in fact, in legislation, they've already legislated a system that is not dissimilar to what we are talking about. They just haven't brought it into effect. Mm-hmm. And so we would prefer that Saskatchewan design a system that they think makes sense. But we have been clear that it's well within the federal government's right to take action to protect the environment. And it's only fair that there's a price across the country.
Aren't you imposing something then, given that you're right, 80% of Canadians already live under a carbon price environment, aren't you imposing something that you don't need to impose? Let Saskatchewan be the maverick if they want. Other provinces have seen the light and done it without any prodding from the federal government.
Well, it's really a matter of fairness. I mean, we have businesses operating across the country, and we need to provide the certainty. And we think that there's a real opportunity to work together. But the reason you put a price on pollution is that, one, it reduces emissions, but two, it fosters innovation, because businesses will figure out a way to innovate so that they pollute less. And we've already seen this, that businesses across the country are developing all these amazing technological solutions that we can then export. So there's a company called Carbon Cure out of Dartmouth, Nova Scotia.
You're fixing it on Saskatchewan.
What they do is they take carbon dioxide out, so from industry, what you don't want to go in the air, and they inject it into cement. To make it stronger. And now I was in California, and California cement companies are using it. Mm-hmm. In fact, in Saskatchewan, they have Boundary Dam, carbon capture and sequestration, to use on coal fired plants. Right. It actually only works, though. It's only economic if you put a price on pollution.
The problem some people see is you're not penalizing business, you're hitting the consumer with a carbon tax. Why shouldn't business pay it if they're generating the pollution instead of the consumers who are just using the products?
So businesses will pay. And I think that's the point. We want polluters to pay. And this is an opportunity. Like, when you look around the world, lots of countries and states have a price on pollution. So I was just in California, fifth largest economy in the world. They have a price on pollution. China's bringing in a price on pollution this year. They're the second largest economy in the world, largest polluter. Oregon has a price on pollution, the eastern seaboard of the United States. Chile's coming on board, Mexico, the European Union, because it just makes sense. And we are moving to a lower carbon future. And Canada should be doing it. We should be doing it together. And we are doing it together, working with business, working with provinces, working with all Canadians. And this is part of it. And I would say to the people of Saskatchewan, like, I was in Saskatchewan many times, and I've seen the innovation that's going on there. Saskatchewan's a very progressive province. Mm-hmm. They brought in universal health care. And I think there's a real opportunity to design a system that makes sense. And I've talked to businesses in Saskatchewan, and we've listened to them. And that's what our system is designed to do. I would prefer, though, that Saskatchewan figures out what system they want. And all the revenues, if we have to provide a system, all the revenues go back into Saskatchewan. We're not in this. It's not to take money. It's to reduce pollution, get innovation.
How do you explain to people, like, I live in Ontario, and I'm paying more at the pump, and I'm paying more for my hydro and all that sort of thing as part of this carbon pricing thing. How do I get the money back? You say it's revenue neutral. Where's all that money going?
Well, it really depends on what provinces' approaches are. So British Columbia gives all the money back in terms of tax breaks for individuals and business. And we're looking at that for the federal option if we needed to use that. Different provinces.